The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
When I was a student at Stanford University, at that time there was a statue of Rodin's thinker in front of the library, and it's moved it since then. And Rodin's thinker is probably most of you know it. He's naked, sitting on a chair. It looks a little bit like he's having a hard time in the toilet. He's kind of bent over, and the fist kind of, and the fist in his chin, right, kind of thinking really hard about something. And it's a great sculpture. And the way it was situated in front of the library, there was a kind of a lawn, long, kind of narrow lawn going straight out from Rodin. And the statue was on one end of the thinker, and there was nothing on the other end. And at some point going by this to the library, I thought, oh, I think what I should do is sneak into Stanford at night and bring a comparably sized statue of the Buddha meditating and have the two facing each other. And the thinker and the meditator. Now, I don't want to disparage thinking. It's a wonderful tool. It's a wonderful thing to do. I enjoy thinking sometimes. And thinking also can get us into trouble and cause a lot of suffering. And the image of the Buddha meditating is a person who, at least the primary thing the person is doing is not thinking, but is someone who is not intensely involved or straining with anything, but rather all strain, all tension has fallen away. And so there's a image of profound calm or peace there. So I never did that. I never got around to getting a big statue of the Buddha to put there. And then there was another Frenchman named René Descartes who said, I think, therefore I am. And I've often thought that it was an incomplete sentence. And he left out, or someone must have left out the rest of the sentence. I think, therefore, I am unhappy. So when I encountered Buddhism, my first years of Buddhist practice, one of the things I became a specialist in was how I made myself unhappy. And I saw that a lot of it for me had to do about what I was thinking about. And a lot of thinking about things that those particular things, isn't thinking is bad, but the kind of things I was thinking about, I wasn't just thinking about it, I was obsessing about, didn't make me happy. And in fact, it was so bad in the Zen monastery that I dreaded is probably too strong a word, but I did not look forward to the monastic days off. Because in the monastery, on days on, you were very busy in the monastery. You had a schedule, a meditation, and work, and ritual, all kinds of things you did. And so you're always busy. And it was wonderful because it kept me distracted from myself. But on my days off, there was no distractions. And I would go for long hikes in the mountains by myself and do various things. And then I was really left to be with myself. And I usually felt pretty lousy those days. All my existential angst and my concerns about life and myself and what I was going to do with myself and all kinds of things would come up, and it would weigh heavy on me. And so I spent a lot of time getting studying how I made myself unhappy. And at some point, I started becoming happy. And one of the things I learned was not to give so much credence to my thinking, what I thought. Thinking is certainly should be believed sometimes. I once said, in some kind of teaching context, something like, you don't have to believe your thoughts. And afterwards, this person came up to me and said, Gil, I need to talk to you. I grew up in a cult, and this is what they told us there in the cult. You know, as a way of kind of keeping people cultish. And so it took a long time before I was going to say that again. But what I learned, at least I'm not telling you that you should, but what I learned was I didn't have to believe everything that I thought, and didn't have to take it so seriously. And I learned to quiet my mind down. I learned not only not to believe in my thoughts, but also not to be so busily engaged in thinking. And it was a kind of a strange idea for me at first, because the way I found my way through life was by thinking. And the idea of not having my thoughts to guide me or orient me or tell me what to do or tell me what to think or how to interpret something or how to judge something or add meaning to it or whatever, it was very strange. It was a little bit odd. But then slowly I discovered that when I let my mind get quiet, I got happier. So then you might ask, happy about what? Tell me what you were happy about so I can do that too. Well, I wasn't happy about anything. I was just happy. I found that by not thinking so much, that a variety of kinds of happiness started coming my way. And one of the great, to me, surprises about my encounter with Buddhism was the variety of kinds of happinesses that I have felt and can feel. And it's not so far away. It's still the case for me that if I'm thinking about things too much, it sometimes stands in the way of me feeling the happiness that's available to me. And my Achilles heel is my sense of responsibility. So I kind of try to take care of things and getting those emails done, replied to, you know. And I'm usually not happy doing emails. But if I stop doing emails and just sit down for a while, then it seems like a background kind of sense of well-being that's there that isn't not there for a reason. So I say this to you because often people pursue happiness. It's one of the great pursuits that some people want, or a sense of well-being, or something comparable to happiness. And sometimes the attempt to attain that is by having some conditions in the world adjusted so that those conditions can make you happy, so that everything can line up in place. And it's also possible, maybe it's possible to do that sometimes if you're lucky, but it's also possible to have the conditions of the world not be organized in a good way for you. And because the mind is not preoccupied or caught up or harassed, oppressed, or with what it's thinking, what it's concerns about, letting certain kind of activity of the mind settle and quiet, there can be sometimes a natural sense of well-being that can well up from the inside, that can be there, independent of what goes on around. Now, in Buddhism, in the classic teachings of Buddhism, back to the teaching of the Buddha, there was a big focus on becoming happy. The ultimate goal is liberation or awakening, but there were teachings that the path to liberation was described was to become happy through being happy, or to be by the means of happiness, attaining the goal of happiness. That the way to become happy was to discover happiness or find happiness. This was a very important kind of slogan in the time of the Buddha, because the Buddha's contemporary religious practitioners, many of them were ascetics. And the idea was not to be happy or have joy or well-being, but rather to do some kind of self-mortification practice. Stand on one foot for days or weeks or months at a time, and or eat very, very little, or fast, and you know, in some ways kind of suffer. And so it was kind of a novel, according to the ancient Buddhist texts, it was kind of a novel thing that the Buddha's teaching, that the path to happiness, to well-being, to liberation, was attained through happiness. You didn't have to mortify yourself or do ascetic practices. And sometimes when people write about Buddhism or study Buddhism, it's very easy to overlook how much emphasis there is in happiness in the tradition. There's a famous text, Buddhist text called the Dhammapada. It's a collection of 420 verses. And I once counted how many of those verses concerned happiness or delight or joy or something like that. And I counted 8 to 9%. That to me seems like a pretty high percentage, focusing on having a sense of well-being. And then if you add to those the verses that focus on peace, release, calm, there's a very high percentage of verses that talk about some sense of developing well-being, having a sense of well-being. In the many of the famous lists the Buddha has, the lists are not there to be lists for their own sake, but rather a list that describes the various functioning of the mind, and the ecology of the mind, how different factors of the mind work together. And so the lists are kind of like an ecological study of what goes on in the mind. And a number of these lists, joy or happiness is a prominent part of the list. There's one list that's called the liberative path or liberative chain of dependent origination. It's a kind of mouthful. But it's a description, a positive description of 12 steps of the Buddhist path to liberation. And three of those steps are delight, joy, and happiness. There's a famous list called the Seven Factors of Awakening. And in the Seven Factors of Awakening, there's joy is one of the factors. In the attainment of strong meditative concentration, joy and happiness are really prominent part of that experience. The attainment of concentration in Buddhism, meditative concentration, it said comes is dependent on developing a sense of well-being, which seems like a little bit reversed for many of us, because many people come to meditation because they're suffering, and they're told in order to really meditate well, you got to feel well. Oh, that'll make you depressed. it's a stepping stone along the way, sooner or later, that meditation hopefully will bring a sense of well-being. As it brings well-being, it's easier to get settled, and so the practice goes deeper. So the tradition talks about lots of different kinds of happinesses and joys and delights. And sometimes I kind of think it's, they say that, you know, the Eskimos have all these different words for snow, because they use, I guess they have many reasons to differentiate different kinds of snow. So in Buddhism, there's all this differentiation, different kinds of joys and happiness, because it's so important. And so there's the delight that comes from having a path of practice. To have a spiritual practice that a person feels gives them a sense of purpose and meaning, that gives them a release, or potential shows them a path of release from their suffering, can give people a lot of hope, a lot of inspiration, can bring kind of light. Wow, I have a path to go. People who have a path are very lucky to know that they have a path and to walk the path. So there's that delight of having a path to walk on, to be, have access to teachings and practices. And then there's the joy of being content with little, content with what you have. An amazing thing I read today. I wanted to give a talk today about happiness. So of course, not of course, but I went on Wikipedia to see what it said about happiness. You know, where else do you go these days? And it was not very illuminating to read what they had to say, except for one curious fact that the author or authors there seemed to kind of wanted to emphasize. They said there were been a lot of studies, surveys of statistical surveys, I guess, of people to see what kind of people are happiest in the world. And oddly enough, I thought, the point they wanted to make over and over again was, they said Republicans are more happy than happier than Democrats. What?
When was the survey taken?
When was the survey taken? They said it was taken also during the Clinton eras. So, it was taken a variety of different times. A whole series of surveys. They claimed, that many surveys made this claim. They don't know why, but what they seem to say is the Republicans seem to be contenter with what they had, happier with what they had, whereas apparently the Democrats weren't so happy with what they had or what's going on.
I thought it was because they didn't think.
They don't think? Oh.
Republicans are more religious, and maybe they have more of a path.
It's possible. There's many possible theories, for why. Maybe they're more religious. Also said the article in Wikipedia that religious people who have spirituality, tend to be happier than people who don't. So who knows? Maybe unfortunate detour here. one of the reasons to mention it is that again, what we think and how we think, how we look upon our world, has a big impact on how much well-being we have. And I'm not suggesting we stop thinking and discriminating or being discerning about what's going on in the world. I'm not saying we should just kind of naively be content with how things are in the world. But it's very interesting to look and see what the impact of our thinking has on our emotional life. And it's possible to be very discerning about what's going on in the world, and actually act to try to make changes in the world, without having the way we think about that affect our hearts, or affect our emotional life, or weigh us down. And I think that's one of the skills that can come with meditation, where we can learn to tease apart what we think from how our thinking impacts us. So we can think wisely and usefully, but not also be weighed down by what we think. So one of the forms of contentment I was trying to say is one of the forms of happiness or joy in Buddhism is contentment. And there's in Buddhism a tremendous emphasis on cultivating a certain kind of contentment. Not universal contentment, because then there'd be no Buddhism. If you're completely content with your suffering, and then you would do nothing about your suffering. If you're completely content with the suffering in society, you'd do nothing about it. But to be content with what you have, to be content with, for Buddhist monastic, to be content with a set of robes, enough clothes to keep the mosquitoes out and keep you warm, to have enough shelter to take care of your basic survival needs, to have enough food to take care of your basic needs, and be content with that without any feelings you need to have a lot more. If you need to have a wardrobe packed with clothes, or a garage packed with cars, or whatever. So the degree to which always wanting things, becomes a hindrance to well-being, and a certain kind of contentment that is an aid and support to having well-being. So cultivating contentment is very important. So this is again to say that I think, therefore I'm unhappy, can also be translated, I obsess, therefore I'm unhappy. I crave, therefore I'm unhappy. So if our thinking involved craving and wanting something all the time, caught up in it, if clouds the mind, fills the mind, makes the mind claustrophobic, and so there's no space in the mind for something else to happen, happiness to happen. A busy mind has no space for happiness, except for the kind of happiness that comes from thinking, or evaluation. But the problem when thinking comes from when happiness comes from thinking about something, it's very fragile. It has to be supported by more thinking. And if thinking can arise independent of what we think, then we don't have to keep thinking ourselves to be happy. So contentment is one of those ways. Develop the kind of the joy of contentment as a stepping stone to go deeper. Then there's a joy that comes from no longer having a mind which is out of control. To have a mind which is not caught up in what's called the hindrances. It was not caught up in, not caught by the tremendous gravitational force of desire or the gravitational force of aversion or restlessness, distraction. You can watch your mind being pulled this way and that way by what we think and what we feel. And to have the attention not being pulled and diverted and held hostage, but the mind be able to hold it still and focus and really be present, it feels like a kind of little bit liberation, a little bit of freedom. And it can feel so delighted, so delightful. Wow. This evening I was with my son looking at a book of optical illusions. And I think they're called these 3D dots. What are they called? 3D dots. They have all these dots. You just look at it and just a field of dots. Then you have to get your eyes crossed. And then this 3D thing pops out. And I was having trouble. trying to cross my eyes this way and that way. And just a field of dots. And then suddenly, it separated out. And I saw the three-dimensional picture. And it floats, it's like it's floating there in the air. It's really something to see. And it just kind of feels like this something's been liberated, something's been freed up. It's very easy to see. It's kind of like, so hard. How could it be so easy? And I strained for so long. So when the mind is free of preoccupation being caught up, it can be a similar kind of shift that goes on in the mind. Wow, it feels such clarity, such openness, such delight. Wow, how'd that happen? So the mind that's not caught up is a one form of joy, the joy of the mind free. And then there's a joy that comes from the joy of engagement, joy of what's called zestful interest. So in meditation, to have real interest, and it says a zestful interest arises after the hindrances are abated. So we're no longer being pulled left and right by all kinds of thoughts and concerns, then there can be real focus in meditation and a zestful interest in being present. And sometimes that zestful interest becomes rapturous. There is, in that discussion of this zestful joy, zestful interest joy, the tradition differentiates between five kinds of joy. There is minor joy. Well, today I had minor joy. And then there's momentary joy. And momentary joy is joy that just suddenly like sparks. It's kind of like a spark of joy. Just, wow, feel good. And then there's it's a cascading joy or showering joy. And that's what joy feels like, these big waves or waves kind of moving through you, showering you or kind of washing through you. Kind of like, maybe a little bit like an orgasm or something, just kind of waves of joy just kind of coming through that to happen. So showering joy is momentary. Transporting joy or uplifting joy is the fourth one, where you feel like you're just kind of being lifted off your cushion, kind of like feel so light and airy and uplifting, and just feels, you know, uplifting joy. And then the fifth joy is pervading joy. And this is a joy where the feeling tone or the sensations of joy, the delight of joy that's in you, kind of pervades all your muscles, seemingly. Just seems your whole body seems saturated. It just feels, you know, so good. You know, just feels so happy and joyful. And then, after joy, more sublime and more enjoyable than joy is happiness. In the Buddhist tradition, it distinguishes between joy, which is good, pretty good, but is energetic, and it's kind of mental. So mental, even though it kind of feels very physical at times, it has a mental quality. It's kind of a little bit energetic, and sometimes in meditation, like on retreat, and people feel a lot of joy, it gets a little bit too intense after a while, and it gets old. People, enough of this. You know, first time, you can't believe your good luck. This is the best, you know. How could and then, I just want to be this way forever. And then after a while, it's like, gee, this is tiring to have all this kind of be charged up all the time with all this joy. And so then there's a quieting down of the energetic qualities of joy, dropping of this mental side of it, and it becomes this very much deeper, tranquil, sublime kind of feeling of well-being that the tradition called sukha in Pali, or happiness. That's much more physically based than the joy. And it's much more satisfying than the joy, because of the much greater tranquility that's there. And then there's that kind of happiness allows for much deeper insight, seeing into our life. One of the teachings of Buddhism is that one of the reasons for developing well-being and happiness is not for its own sake here, but rather it really helps us to see more clearly what's happening, what our life is going on, if the mind has that sense of well-being. There's something about that stable, calm sense of well-being that allows for deeper penetration. So we see more deeply, and at some point, there's a deeper shift of liberation, a deeper stepping out of our attachments, our craving, our sense of self, and a whole different feeling of happiness can arise, a happiness which has no reference point to you. And so it doesn't do you any good to have it. Now, isn't that nice? Or is that, you know, undesirable now? If it doesn't do any good for you to have it, it doesn't do you any good, because if you're there to do anything with it, it goes away. So then what good is it? If it doesn't do you any, if you're not there to enjoy it, well, you do, you know, it's so good. You know, it's so good to be liberated from self. To be caught up in self-concern is one of the ways of standing in the way of being happy. So when I started meditating, as I said earlier, I spent several years, certainly, you know, somewhat happily enough engaged with meditation. I enjoyed it. It was valuable for me. But a big part of what my early practice was about was learning how I made myself unhappy. And really kind of getting it, understanding that really well. And when I understood that well enough, then I could put something to rest. And when I put something to rest in my mind, my heart, then some natural, seemingly almost natural sense of well-being could well up inside. And so I say that because don't think that you can just kind of leave here today and jump into happiness. But it's really worthwhile to spend some time understanding, looking at, what is it that comes together? What are the mental activity that causes you to be unhappy? There are some things that you look at in your own mind and heart that are very difficult to understand. Some sources of suffering, some ways you suffer. But I suspect there's many ways in which you are living, you're not really feeling happy, where it's relatively easy to have some delight, some joy, some happiness, some sense of well-being without a lot of effort. It might be something as simple as looking at that full moon we had here this evening and not rushing down here. I have to get down there and teach. You know, I can't focus on anything but just get down there and teach. You know, I don't want to be late. And then I'm caught up in my world of thinking and wanting and consequence and people and you and, you know, or I can just stop. I did. I stopped and spent a little bit of time on the street just looking at the moon before I came down here. And I felt certain degree of pleasure, enjoyment. And it was so easy. That small thing. How many small senses, how many small possibilities of joy, of well-being, of enjoyment do we overlook in the course of our day because we in some way or other are so busy or so caught up? And how many of those things that we get caught up in do we need to be caught up with? And how many of them are we better served by taking a little break more often? A place where I enjoy myself when I take the time for it is in the supermarket. And the line waiting for the checkout clerk. Because I certainly know what it's like to suffer in the supermarket and suffer waiting for that line and having, I chose the wrong line. You know, what was I thinking? You know, and here I am again, and don't people realize I have an important life to get on with? And how could they have bought all that boxes of, you know, my mind can do these things, and it's not enjoyable. Or I can see what I'm doing there, and I can make a change. I can say, you know, this is not so useful to be caught up here. And I can sometimes now just shift. And it's a fascinating place to be in the supermarket. I can even read headlines in some of the magazines. And mostly I'm just amazed at what I read. How could they write that? Or I look at people, and sometimes what I like doing is I like looking at the people and I do metta, loving kindness practice. They don't know it, but I just sit there and may you be happy. And I look at the clerk and may you be happy. Someone walking up, may you be happy. And sometimes if I really get into it, I imagine their face being happy, kind of smile on their face. And this idea of wishing other people happy, wishing other happiness for other people, is a much cherished Buddhist practice. And sometimes I go to the gym sometimes, and one of my favorite things to exercise on is the stationary bicycle, because I can close my eyes when I do it. You know, some people read. I close my eyes. And I just can pedal away. And then I just sit there and I start doing loving kindness practice for anybody and everybody I can think of. I go through my mind, may you be happy, so-and-so, and so-and-so, and so-and-so. And I just feel so happy doing it. I don't know why I'm happy, but I get so happy. So, they say sometimes in Tibetan Buddhism, I believe, if you want to be happy, cherish others. So that's another form of happiness. The happiness of being able to appreciate, cherish, love, value others, and to wish them happiness. There are many, many kinds of happiness, and it's useful to explore the different types and differentiate the kind of happinesses that come from something that's more stable, the kind of happiness that comes from an evaluation, an idea you have, or this is good that I won the lottery, or this is good that someone's praising me, or this is good that I got a good job. It's okay to feel happy about those things, but they come from ideas. And then separate from that is a kind of happiness that doesn't come from ideas, but comes from a way of being. And so, can we be happy as opposed to, or the opposite, as opposed to think yourself happy? That must be a better way of saying that. Yes, please.
conversation a couple weeks ago with a cousin that I hadn't seen or talked to for a long time. And in the course of talking, she says, I was born happy. And then she kind of explained it. And she had learned not to dwell in the past or worry about the future, and just live in the moment. And I said, well, you're a natural Buddhist. But I've just been struck with that she felt like she was born happy.
Yeah. Beautiful.
She just came in with a certain kind of disposition that, you know, maybe, I mean, are there just naturally born Buddhists?
I've read, there's a lot of studies now on people studying happy people. I've read something about that people have a baseline happiness. And so they think they're going to be happier if something wonderful happens to them, but they feel only happy temporarily and then they fall back to their baseline. Or if really bad things happen to them, relatively bad things, I guess, happen. They feel bad a little bit, but then they come back to their baseline, and people have a baseline where they're happy. And then, but there are certain practices, like meditation practice, spiritual practices, that can change your baseline. So we're not stuck with the baseline we're born in. So maybe some people are born with, you know, whatever reason, you know, a higher baseline than others. But the great thing about something like Buddhist practice is that you can change your baseline. And that certainly I feel has happened to me. Happiness is a much bigger part of my life than it was before I started practicing. And I love going on retreats. I love a lot of things, but I like going on retreats because I just get really happy being on retreat. And one of the reasons I get so happy is that I get happy because I don't have to do anything to be happy. I can just be, and I don't have to. It's enough just to be and to be happy. I don't have to get good food, or I have to get a lot of good things. I don't have to get material. I mean, the idea on retreat, you know, seeing an advertisement. If I'm on a retreat and I see an advertisement, it says, you know, you can be happy if you have the latest electronic gadget. It doesn't tempt me one bit. I have all the happiness I need. So I don't know how I got to this, but baseline, you know. So I don't know. Who knows why people are born where they're born? There's all kinds of speculation, interpretations of all kinds of things about how people are born. I prefer just to take it as a given, how it is, and then we work with that. Any other questions? Yes. Comments? Testimonials about being happy? Yes.
I was thinking about what you just said.
Can you take this microphone,
please? I didn't realize the mic was a condition of asking a question. I was thinking, Gil, about what you said about being on retreat and how easy it is to be happy on retreat, and which leads me to this perennial question about the happiness that arises when the conditions support happiness,
right,
or make happiness easier, as opposed to sustaining or nurturing happiness when the external conditions make that harder. Can you just talk a little bit about that?
Not sure what to say, except that what I learned from retreats is how little it takes to be happy. And so that translated into my daily life outside of retreats, where I know that as well. And so I can be pretty content outside of retreats as well, remembering how little it takes. And it's a very useful lesson for me to have learned, because I could have a strong tendency to, used to it especially, to want things and fill myself with projects and activities, and I still fill myself a lot with things and for a variety of reasons. But I know that I can kind of just put a stop to it, and that happiness is not so far away. So I don't know if that addresses your question. You want to try again? Your question?
I'd like an answer that would make me happier than that answer just gave me.
You have...
No, that's fine, Gil, thank you. Actually.
What?
I said I would like an answer that would make me happier than that answer just made me.
Oh, you have one for me. Do you have one?
No, and I'm playing. Right. Thank you, that was sufficient.
You're about to go on retreat, aren't you?
No.
You're not? Oh. Yeah, Helen.
Yes.
Yeah.
So, I guess I have a fairly flat kind of. I have a fairly flat kind of temperament. I don't get upset. I don't get sad, but I don't get excited and happy. I feel contentment or joy some of the time, but I seem to have an aversion to being told I ought to be happy.
Yes, good.
It doesn't feel like something I want.
Good. That's fine. I don't have a problem with that.
but your whole talk was if I ought to want it.
Oh, it came across that way?
To me it did, anyway.
Yeah, well, that could be oppressive, can't it? Well, this is. I'm glad you brought this up. Something I wanted to say and I forgot is too much can be made of happiness. In a sense, happiness in Buddhism is a kind of an umbrella term for a variety of forms of well-being. But if you use the word happiness too much, I think people have some idea that it has to look a certain way, always smiling and cheerful, and or you know, always rapturous or something. But having a sense of well-being maybe has a broader terms, and more people can find themselves in that. And so maybe you can find yourself in well-being in a way you can't with happiness. And then there's a range of different kinds of well-being, and in different circumstances, different situations, you might be able to have access to different forms of well-being, different forms of happiness. I think if the focus is too much narrow a concept of happiness, we can limit ourselves rather than to free ourselves. It can be kind of superficial to always have I'm always supposed to be happy and cheerful, and if some relative has just died, it's not really appropriate to be happy. That's not the feeling you'd have. It's possible, but it's also possible to have a certain kind of well-being or joy and to be sad at the same time. But maybe it wouldn't define, it wouldn't look like conventional happiness. It wouldn't look like conventional joy or something. I read recently that someone claimed that the opposite of joy and sadness is cynicism. So I think that as we become freer, there's a wider range of emotions that we might feel in different circumstances. And different people have different find themselves in different places in the scale of emotional responses. Some people are very intense and they have intense rapture. Some people have very quiet happiness and sense of well-being. Each person has their own way, and we don't want to compare one person to another, but find our own way. But even in your life, can you differentiate between ways in which you get in the way of well-being and how your mind operates, and ways that support a greater sense of well-being, a greater sense of freedom? And if you can, then I think hopefully what I was trying to say is that you can use a little bit your well-being, your happiness as a guide to help free yourselves of the ways in which your mind is not free.
One of the freedoms I want is the freedom to feel sad when I feel sad.
Absolutely. I wouldn't want that to be taken away from someone. It would be very disrespectful of someone's appropriate sadness to say, you should do this Buddhism and get over it. Do Buddhist practice and get over it.
Maybe even if it's not appropriate.
That's up to you.
I mean,
but people come, maybe, yeah, but when you come to me, as some people do, and say, I'm really feeling a lot of grief or sadness, and it feels like I'm stuck, can you give me some advice? And I'll give you advice. But if you don't ask me, I won't give you any. I don't have a strong feeling that people should be different than where they are. So, you know, I'm fine with.
There seems to be a lot of emphasis on may I be happy.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. Should I not include you in my metta? You like rest. May you be safe. May you be healthy. Yeah.
I guess I just have this experience of happy that's a bad kind of happy.
No, tell me more. Say a little more. What's bad happy?
Well, the happy that everybody's sort of forcing themselves to have.
Oh, yeah. That's terrible. Yeah. You know, if it's forced, then it's not really happiness. So that's why, remember what I said, I tried twice, I made the point in my talk, that the way that I discovered this happiness was by understanding how I made myself to suffer. That was the road for me. And so it wasn't, and I think in Buddhism, it's much, if there's a difference between the ideal, there's a lot of ideals in Buddhism, if there's a difference between an ideal and what's actually happening for you, always choose what's happening. Choose it in the sense of investigate it, and that's your door. And go into that door and find out what's going on. Don't override what's actually happening. So you certainly don't want to pretty things over or paint them over with some kind of cheerfulness. There has to have some depth to it, and the depth comes from really having looked honestly at suffering. I was great that you asked that. I appreciate it a lot that you brought that up. I would have left this evening and felt very incomplete when I realized, oh, I left out something, you know, like that. So thank you. So for those of you who want to be happy, may you be happy. And for those of you who want to be peaceful, may you be peaceful. And for those of you who want to be authentic, may you be authentic. Thank you.